Ukrainian Defense Minister Fedorov is out, and now Ukrainian Commanding General Sirski is also out. The news was breaking just this morning. It had been rumored for some time, but the Washington Post is reporting that Zelensky has outed Ukraine's military commander in a continued major shakeup. So just in the last few days, the Ukrainian prime minister has been replaced. The Ukrainian minister of defense has been replaced. The third minister of defense in one year, by the way. And then now they're a commanding general. All this is Zelensky claims that they are making more and more success on the battlefield. According to the Washington Post this morning, Sirski isn't willing to discuss the problem face-to-face, said Fedorov, in explaining why he was why Zelensky got rid of him. But this is what Fedorov had said, just the defense minister, just before he got sacked. Previously, Ukraine's minister for digital transformation told reporters last week, Sirski saved our country in 2022. He led the Kiev operation. He led the Kharkiv operation. We cannot underestimate a commander like that, but the war has changed completely. Drone architecture evolves, or new features appear in drones at least four times a year. Fedorov has said the commander-in-chief, command and control system has changed, and we must change as well. We can't keep relying on what has worked back then. Now, there are a couple of things that are going on here. There is one where there is the actual issues that have to do with the war, the conduct of the war, et cetera. But then there are the bigger issues that are the real reason why Fedorov was replaced and why Sirski has been replaced as well. And that is, and what he's talking about right there is Fedorov, who was a young guy. I think he was in his mid-30s, so he didn't have a lot of experience, but he did have some new ideas. And so as he was implying there, he said Sirski's stuck in the past, even the relatively recent past of 2022. He said what worked back then won't work right now, and Sirski was accused of basically saying, well, whatever worked back in 2022 is still going to work today and wouldn't change. And the Fedorov was saying, hey, we need to do some new things. The nature of battle has changed, and definitely it has. And he says that the commanding general wasn't working. So they had a lot of friction between the two. One might imagine that the president would get rid of the guy who's apparently was the one stuck in the past and not the one trying to draw them into the future. If it was based on what's happening on the ground militarily, that's probably what would have happened. But the fact that he replaced them both, and this just days after having replaced the prime minister, implies there's something else. Well, as you know, we do have some contacts into the folks that have knowledge about what's going on in the Ukrainian regime. And it turns out, and this is not going to shock anybody, this is mainly about corruption. Is that the primary problem, I'm told, is what happened between Zelensky and Fedorov and the previous folks as well, is there's a big debate about how money is spent, where it goes, and who gets what. And the idea that that Fedorov was a clean hands and he was somebody who was above corruption, apparently he was not as corrupt as some others, but apparently what got him in trouble was not his willingness to be corrupt or his unwillingness to be corrupt, but his unwillingness to be corrupt in the way Zelensky wanted. So Zelensky wants to make these particular groups happy and Fedorov wanted to make some other groups happy. He did genuinely appear to be focused on what can we do to change the nature of the war to try to make our armed forces better? That appears to be genuine. How he went about it, though, was to make certain financial interest in Ukraine happy, shall we say, and in Europe happy. And Zelensky wanted a different group of financial interest to be happy, also in Europe, but a different group. And so that's all battling inside, because this war is pretty much about money right now. Let's just make sure everybody's crystal clear on this. There is no military solution. It doesn't matter if George Patton rises from the dead and goes back in and takes over for Ukraine. It's not going to make any difference. It's a war of attrition, and wars of attrition historically have had almost no influence at all, just around the margins about generalship and great people in the field and all that kind of stuff and tremendous sacrifice or tremendous success of tactical formations, et cetera. That has marginal interest or influence, but it's all about who's got the most industrial capacity, who has the most men, who has the most willpower, and who has the ability to sustain combat for the longest. It pretty much is that simple. Ukraine doesn't have it. May have seen on our show yesterday where Professor Pietro has said that his research is showing that basically the Ukraine side is trying to have this fantasy strategy that if we keep going long enough and if we make things bad enough and warn Europe enough, that eventually they'll bring in the armed forces of NATO, the actual ground troops, not just giving them weapons, because they see that that's the only path they have to success. So everything is predicated on trying to cause things to expand such that and trying to prompt Russia into striking Europe. Now, remember, we talked about this a lot recently. Let's make sure everybody's understanding this, too. Most of the thing Ukraine's been doing, and we have some additional updates from just this morning, as a matter of fact, what the Ukraine side is doing into Russia, is not really trying to say, hey, let's try and cause Russia to lose the war. Let's cause them to have problems to support their troops so that at some point our troops can take over, we'll stop them from their forward movement, and then we'll eventually turn them back. That's a fantasy. Even the Ukrainian side doesn't believe that fantasy. But what they do believe is if they can hit enough key targets and enough sensitive targets and emotionally important targets in Russia, and you see that one there, that's from the latest Wildberries. That's not from the day before. That's from today. Wildberries, another one, basically an Amazon kind of distribution center that are scattered around throughout Russia. That's the latest one. So they just continue to have these massive fires, and these drones are getting through. And I guess when Russia has figured out where its defenses were going to be, they put it in the areas where there was the most military importance. But now then Ukraine has changed targets. Now they're going after economic targets. So these things are really having a big, huge hit on small companies who Russia relies on to have the middle class succeed. And so this is going after that. So it is definitely having, or it's likely anyway, to have a meaningful impact economically on Russia. That's not going to have any impact on its ability to wage war, because that's not the objective. For Ukraine, what appears the actual objective is to cause so much anger in Russia that they finally put enough pressure on President Putin to then do what we've been talking about for many weeks now, to strike into to Europe. Because that is the idea of the Ukraine side, is if we can prompt Russia to fire into Europe, that's going to activate Article 5, and then the whole kit and caboodle, all 32 countries are now going to be over our shoulder, and we're going to be going in, and then we'll show them Russians a thing or two. That's the perverted fantasy. Because if that is truly what it is, and evidence suggests that it is, then that's a suicide pact for Ukraine. Because let me just tell you this, make sure everybody's crystal clear on this too. There is no scenario, zero, to where this war turns conventionally, and it includes NATO troops, and the Russians from where they are right now in the parts of occupied Ukraine are pushed out of there in the Donetsk, in the Donbass area, Luhansk, Donetsk, Zaporizhia, and Kherson, or any of the other places they're at, like in the Sumy province, the Kharkiv province, the Dnepropetrovsk, you name it, that Russia would be pushed out and that they would go back to their borders and say, darn it, man, we really tried hard. That will never happen. It's not even a possibility, because the day that transition starts to happen, and actually the day that NATO decides to come in, you can just start counting down. You can start a stopwatch. There's going to be nuclear weapons. It's as simple as that. The country with the largest nuclear stockpile in the world will not even contemplate allowing its conventional forces to be defeated in the field on its border. That's why they went to war in the first place in 2022, was to keep NATO and its missiles off of their doorstep. So there's no possibility that Russia is going to allow that. But that does seem to be what Zelensky's trying to do. And unfortunately, it looks like that Europe is not helping themselves out. And this is in today's Kiev Post. You see the title right there. UK, Germany team up on secret long-range missile to strike Russia. Secret. Well, it's not secret anymore. The Kiev Post is putting it out there, which again implies that that's the intent of the government to try and make sure that Russia is well aware of this. According to this article, Britain and Germany are quietly developing a new long-range missile capable of striking targets up to 2,000 kilometers away inside Russia as part of a major expansion of European defense cooperation. According to a report by the German newspaper Welt, Published jointly with Britain's The Telegraph, the classified deep precision strike program has become the flagship of a project of rapidly expanding security partnership between London and Berlin to strike into Russia. Now, what do you think the chances are that Russia is going to say, man, I'm really scared about that. Boy, I hope that didn't happen because that would be bad. And then they just keep on fighting in Ukraine. Well, I think that that's part of the reason, although it was developed in Telegraph, apparently originally published that. But you can be sure that Kiev is wanting to blast it out even further to say, yeah, it's going to go on. But all we're doing is potentially expanding this war into a position that Ukraine could literally be wiped off the map. Because if Russia is going to use nuclear weapons in such an occasion like this, my guess would be the first target is going to be Ukraine. Because if they conclude there's no more negotiations, there's no more rational sense, it's not going to be solved on the ground in Ukraine itself because Europe is going to get even more. And now then, I think that the weird thing about that, by the way, going back to this article here, when you read down deeper into it, this said that this would be developed or manifested somewhere around 2037 or maybe 2034, I think is what it said. Something nonsensical so far into the future, it's not even relevant. Not to this fight here, unless, of course, they're thinking, hey, we'll just keep the war going up until 2034 and then we'll come in. I mean, it doesn't make any sense if actual end of the war is your objective. Makes perfect sense if expanding the war or just keeping it going into perpetuity if for the Western side, especially for UK and Germany, if that's their intent, then it makes perfect sense here. Because what that tells you is that for the countries of Germany and France and UK, they're like saying, hey, however many hundreds of thousands or millions of Ukrainians die, that's fine. As long as it keeps staying on the ground inside of Kiev, then that's a good deal for us. And so that puts more and more pressure on Putin, and he's getting it from inside to say, hey, listen, this is not working. What we're doing is not going to make any difference. We have to escalate. And that's, of course, what Zelensky wants. The perverse part is if Zelensky gets what he wants, it's near suicide pact for his country, not just on the line of contact, not just on the provinces that have already been annexed, but possibly on the rest of his country, too. Remember their nuclear fallout that happened many, many years ago, back in the 1990s, I think it was. That's still kind of an entombed situation today, which part of their country was happened to be blocked off. A lot of people had a lot of problems. That's nothing compared to what would happen if it was a nuclear blast. So we have got to wake up to what's going on here, because this war, which should never have started and had a chance to be taken off the table before it started in 2021, late 2021, and then, of course, in 2022, Istanbul and all the stuff forward, we may come to genuinely and deeply and permanently regret that we're unwilling to have diplomacy, that we were unwilling to have morality, and that we just said, hey, we're just going to keep fighting until we get what we want. And unfortunately, getting what you want is not quite what you imagine. Because if you get the war with Russia that you want, if it goes nuclear, we're all screwed here. So in many respects, and this is what, circling back around to the beginning, our source in Kiev says it doesn't really matter who's the commanding general, who's the prime minister, who's the minister of defense. The names are irrelevant. They can switch them in and out. What matters is the money flow coming from Europe into Ukraine and, of course, all the pockets that it goes into once it gets there. And the pockets that it gets intercepted into on the way there, actually, from Europe and probably the United States as well. There's probably people on that gravy train all over it. And so for them, they're fine. All these people are okay with all that because you can change out whoever you want to. You can do whatever you want to say and have headlines saying anything as long as the money train stays going on. And that seems to be what Zelensky's about and all of his benefactors in Europe. And the Ukraine people continue to pay the price for that. And if it expands into a European war, then millions of other Europeans are also going to pay the price for the immorality of keeping a war going that shouldn't have even started. That's where that is. Let's go to the current situation in the Middle East right now. President Trump, just before we came on the air, published this on his Truth Social. It's just a little over an hour and a half ago. He said, from this point forward, anytime the Islamic Republic of Iran shoots at a ship in the Strait of Hormuz, whether it be by missile, rocket, drone, or any other device or weapon, the United States will bomb and destroy one bridge or power plant, including those located next to or in the capital city of Tehran. And then the weird thank you for your attention to this matter. And in case we weren't sure who the president of the United States was, it's Donald J. Trump. Well, listen, we've had overnight, we had the 11th consecutive attack into Tehran, which was one of the bigger ones that we've had. And according to this information here from the Lord Bibo, he compiled information here. And it says the intensity of the attack has exceeded previous days in all those different cities right there. So you see, it's quite a few. There was 11 different cities to include Tehran. Bandar Abbas, again, that gets hit a lot. Parchin gets hit a lot. Tabriz is hit frequently. So a lot of these are repeated targets, but we keep going back and forth and hitting them over and over again. Now, let's take a look at the implications of this, because these targets that are being hit in these locations are not getting at the only thing that, or not the only thing, but the primary thing that matters the most. The one thing that the Iranian side has that we can't get rid of, and we've tried everything in the world from 40 days of bombing, a blockade, a memorandum of understanding to try to get that loose, although that's not going to have any military impact, but we got rid of that anyway. And now there is no MOU, there is no ceasefire. We're in the 11th straight day, and there's no end in sight of how far we're going to keep going. But we're not hitting the only thing that matters, because we can't. Now, you would know that from listening to some of the people at the top of our government in the U.S. Senate and at the minister, at the Secretary of War level, Pete Hegseth. We're going to show you in just a minute some of the exchanges that happened yesterday, and you're going to see why we're in such trouble and we're going to stay in trouble. First of all, before we get to that, though, let's take a look at what the U.S. Central Command says, because they're continuing their pattern of basically fabricating stories, lying, and misinforming the American public to make it sound like what they're doing is really swell. On the upper left hand, you see that this is what was published this morning by Central Command on the 11th night of strikes against Iran. And what they put in there and down in the text is, despite Iranian aggression, the Strait of Hormuz remains open for commercial vessel transit. Since early in May, Central Command forces have helped facilitate the transits of approximately 900 commercial vessels and 450 million barrels of oil. Like, man, that is such a great deal. Problem is, it's also very, very inaccurate. Also, it doesn't have anything about the scale. 900 sounds like a large number, except when you see that from May, that's an average of about 10 or 11 ships per day instead of the average over the previous period of time, which I was read this morning, was about 135. So in case your math skills are not quite up to par, 11 is less than 135, and it is pathetically small to the extent that it doesn't even matter to any kind of transit that happens. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, you saw it yesterday, the CNBC was reporting that ships are shunning the Strait of Hormuz. Renewed fighting strains key on the corridor. So despite what the Central Command continues to say over and over, that everything is open, that the Strait of Hormuz is flowing, et cetera, you see that CNBC is reporting that rather than recovering steadily, vessel movements are likely to continue coming in ebbs and flows. S&P Global data painted a similar picture. Just 40 vessels transited the strait between July 17th and July 19th, averaging roughly 13 crossings a day, while weekly traffic in July 19th fell almost 50% from the previous week. Commercial ships still accounted for more than 70% of traffic over the period, although only about one-third were assigned as compliant with maritime restrictions. Iran-linked and sanctioned vessels continued to dominate any movement. So somehow that didn't make the Central Command press release. That, yeah, we're bragging about all these ships that are going through, but most of them are the ones that are compliant with Iran. Most of that oil that went out was because the Iranian side had foresight, like they always do, whether it's tactically, operationally, or strategically. Their foresight has continued to pay dividends, and it did this time too, because they had a huge number of ships already queued up. And so that the minute the blockades came off, they rushed the exit, and then they got out, and I think I read somewhere around $50 billion of oil they got out. That was Iranian oil going to Iranian customers, primarily China, India, some others in Asia. So while Central Command is bragging like we did all this stuff, most of it was from the Iranian side. And so the southern corridor and the Strait of Hormuz on the Omani waters that we helped set up has been virtually dry. Central Command doesn't mention any of that stuff. So that sets this, or that continues a pattern that we see that our government in the military, in certainly a lot of the talking heads on the television, or even members of the government, just cannot tell the truth at all. Let me show you a few things that have happened here yesterday in the Senate. First of all, we have Senator Murphy was asking Secretary of War Pete Hegseth. You said before that we had, what was the word, functionally destroyed Iran within the first couple of weeks. How's that working out?
How is it possible if their capabilities were, quote, functionally destroyed 3 months earlier, as she claimed, for them to be doing this now?
Well, Senator, Iran is at the weakest point militarily it has ever been in the past decade, certainly maybe in 47 years, as they've gathered effectively a terror army. And that terror army was built to try to create conventional capabilities to defend against a pursuit of nuclear weapons, which meant thousands of ballistic missiles, many of which we have destroyed, others of which they have put inside facilities and hidden in underground facilities. That's what terror regimes would do. So I acknowledge clearly, they still have capabilities, no doubt. But the amount of damage that we've done to them over the course of these series of operations has put them in the worst place they've ever been.
Yeah, but has it put them in the worst place they've ever been? Let me just show you a couple of targets here. This right here, I think I showed you this yesterday. This is the recent targets. That was just from 12 to 19 July. There's a new one out, actually, that shows from the 20th to the 21st, and it's very similar to this. A lot of the same targets have been hit, too. A lot of radar systems are slowly being peeled away from the United States, making it more and more difficult to even identify incoming. We've also seen recent reports that advanced missiles are being used by Iran, more capable than the ones that were fired earlier in the war, which, by the way, they claimed at the time was going to be the case. And now we're seeing it as not approved by the Iranian side. We're not even listening to what they're saying. We're listening to what our own troops are saying, that we start identifying where they're coming in, and then the incoming warheads start maneuvering, which makes it nearly impossible to hit and impossible even to tell where it's going to strike. But you see that all these different targets are being hit, all these American bases. Meanwhile, we have that they have increasing ranges and capabilities, because you see some of those same targets that I put on the first screen. Now you see here's the different categories of ballistic missiles or long-range drones that are necessary to strike those targets. And that tells you that their capabilities are very robust. So when the senator is asking the Secretary of War, how is it they could have been functionally destroyed in April and May, and all of a sudden now they're still hitting this stuff? Yeah, thank you. There's the one from the 20th and 21st. Thanks, Gary. You see that they're continuing to strike every night. Every night we've hit. I think I read that there's been new ones, especially into Kuwait this morning. So Iran is also continuing on with, I guess it's on its 12th day of strike. So I'm sure we'll follow later on tonight, too. A little bit more on that in a second. But let's move on to Senator Ossoff. He asked a little bit more pointed of a question. And, well, actually, no, before I get there, I want to mention the dishonesty and the deception that Secretary Hegseth said in his answer to her. He's saying this terrorist regime, so he's again using this moral language that denudes the Iranian side from any kind of three-dimensional depth, makes them a two-dimensional caricature. Well, they're evil, so that's it. Don't even worry about saying anything else. They're a terror army, not a National Defense Force, not the IRGC, not an army, a terror army. Everything to automatically trigger connections in your mind so you don't have to think. That is by design. It's not an oversight, or it's not just an emotional plea. It's a design intent to strip away any thinking. So, they're just bad, so it doesn't matter. I mean, we can't deal with evil. We can't negotiate with the terrorists, right? So, even though we did. But anyway, that's aside. But then he's saying, yeah, and this is terrorist over. They have the defense of a nuclear weapon. He said their whole organization is not designed to defend the country. No, it's designed to protect our ability to build a nuclear weapon. There was no nuclear weapon. There was no nuclear weapon since 2000. It wasn't even a program, even a research program, since 2003. Now, we don't know for sure what happened after 2025. That much is true because of our stupidity last year to start a war that didn't need to be fought over the weapons of mass destruction that our intelligence said didn't exist. And then we said we blew all that up, Operation Midnight Hammer, all the stuff that obliterated President Trump says ad nauseum. And now then, though, we want to just forget about all that and say, no, they were, and that's what they're doing. See, those things are incompatible. You can't have your intelligence services say, even this year, from 2025 and 2026, the intelligence services publicly in Senate testimony said that they did not have a nuclear weapons program. And yet in the Senate, there's Secretary Hegseth just stating as though it's a fact that they are, and that's what their whole organization was for. And that's absurd because, look, if they had that, why would they, after 47 years, they have never actually produced one up to Operation Midnight Hammer? So 46 years, I guess. I still worry that any day something's going to pop up and we're all going to be shocked about, you know, some mushroom cloud flying up in the middle of the Iranian desert somewhere signaling that they now have nuclear weapons. I worry about that. And actions like this, actions like Secretary Hegseth is what's going to have helped propel them along that path. Now, similar theme here, Senator Ossoff adds a little bit of a twist on it.
In the second week of the conflict, you stated that Iran's military had been, quote, destroyed and, quote, made combat ineffective. Was that an accurate statement?
What the American military has done to the Iranian military is a historic military defeat, and they're ineffective in that context.
Secretary, early in the conflict, day three, you said one of those core objectives was to, quote, destroy the missile threat, and as you restated on day five, to, quote, obliterate Iran's missiles and drones. Those were clearly and repeatedly stated core objectives of the campaign, which 4 months ago you declared had been completed victoriously with every single objective achieved. Were those objectives achieved 4 months ago?
No one ever stated that every single missile was gone. Ultimately, combat ineffective means they're not able to dig them out of their UGFs and shoot
at
us.
Missile
threat, it doesn't mean they don't have underground facilities where they put missiles in them and hold on to them because they're the world's largest state sponsor of terrorism. So we never expected they would stop having capabilities to shoot. The question is at scale against an opponent like the United States of America.
Yeah, okay, fine. We'll use your standard there. At scale. What does this look like? This is just over a week. Gary showed you one of the last two nights here. That is at scale. We continue to lose troops. Now it's over 500 that are wounded and 18 that are dead, and that number is almost certainly to keep climbing. Every day we fire Iran, they fire back at us. We can't stop it. We can't stop them from firing missiles. That is the very definition of combat effective. You can't stop them. Therefore, what he said on day three and 4 months ago were all lies. We told you at the time that was the case, but now it's showing even more graphically. And like always, Secretary Hegseth cannot honestly answer any bloody question at all. So he's sitting there, and here's your words. This is what you said. And unfortunately, and I didn't see all the testimony, so I don't know if he ever trotted out a graphic that we're doing for you right now to show you here's what's being hit at scale. Then how do you reconcile those two? Of course, he wouldn't answer the question even if he did, because Secretary Hegseth can't tell the truth. And just like when Zelensky can't tell the truth and how he's harming his own country, Secretary Hegseth, and therefore his boss, President Trump, who also tells the same categories of lies, is harming us. Because our armed forces continue to lose the capability to fire offensive missiles and defensive missiles. So our THAADs and our PAC-3s we're running out of, and they're not that effective anyway, but now we're even running short, so we're soon going to be like Kiev is, where they can't defend against anything that Russia sends in there. And now even our offensive missiles, pretty soon we're just going to be left with a bunch of old stuff and a bunch of dumb bombs, which are not near as powerful or effective or can hit the target with the precision that what we become used to, because we're going to keep throwing them at these targets. And they're not having any impact. All this targets that I showed you, all these things that we hit during here, I think only one of these is actually a mountain, and who knows whether that had any success or not. Almost certainly it didn't. But you see, we keep firing all these different targets, and believe me, those are not just one missile each. Those are each of those probably has its own target array. So there's probably 80, 90, 100, maybe even more missiles of all different types that are used to attack that target list. Every day, our stockpiles dwindle. So in the event that we get into a war with a peer competitor somewhere, and believe me, they can do math, and they're seeing our stockpiles, they're seeing our capabilities and our defense industrial base limitations, and they're thinking, you guys just keep going, man. You're making yourself weaker day by day. And if we keep going on with this insanity, with lies from the Secretary of War and the President of the United States telling the Senate and therefore the American public, oh, no, we're fine. We can do all this stuff. We can do anything we want to. We've got plenty. Jack Keane, remember him yesterday? We showed you. Our magazine depth had been replaced. Everything is back up. So we got plenty. Don't even worry about it. We'll be able to do this. We can do this all day. Only it's not true. We can't. Now, Senator Kennedy, Republican Senator Kennedy, he actually got a little bit agitated with Secretary Hegseth because he was at least asking one of the right questions about hitting mountains.
Guys, we need straight answers. We need straight answers. Do we have the ability to destroy whatever is underneath Pickaxe Mountain?
Senator, a lot of our capabilities are classified, but if anybody in the world can reach anything on this, on God's green earth, it's the United States military, the most powerful military in the world. It's all about options and trade-offs.
Oh my God, you did not do that. You did not hide behind, well, you know, that's classified. I can't really talk about that in open. It's not classified. Can you get in what's in Pickaxe Mountain, or can you not? That's not hard to figure out. That's not classified. We talked about all of our bunker busters and everything that we bragged about incessantly in public. No classified was cited then during Operation Midnight Hammer. We talked about how our B-52s flew over, dropped all this ordnance, and it obliterated everything, right? That wasn't classified then. Why is it classified now? Because it doesn't work. It didn't work on those three mountains in 2025. You blew up a bunch of stuff on the surface. You blew up the holes where the exit ramps were, silos through which they could launch, et cetera, or the way they could get in there. You destroyed all that, but you didn't destroy anything underneath because you can't get down that far. And that's the way all of these missile cities were born, not just those nuclear facilities, but all of their missile cities as well. Pickaxe Mountain, if you're not aware, that's where Israeli intelligence has recently divulged and discovered out of nowhere. Oh, you know what? Turns out that Iran has actually been working to make new centrifuges, and they have other reprocessed material, and they've moved it to Pickaxe Mountain, and now then they're going back on with their nuclear weapons program. How convenient is that? Because you can't go after the three sites that we knew of before because those have been obliterated, according to President Trump, so there's no reason to go back there. Oh, we got them under satellite surveillance. Oh, well, then we have to come up with a new one, Pickaxe Mountain, and that's where they're doing it right now. That's a very convenient thing. But Senator Kennedy's question is legit. Can you go after that? And you heard the non-answer. Aside from saying it's classified, then he said if there's any country on God's earth that can go and do this, it's the United States of America. Oh, yeah, that's a great one there. There's Pickaxe Mountain itself. That's one of the things you're talking about. And you can see there on the left that, there's some of the entrance tunnels. There's some more on the right in this description here. So we can find that. We can knock those tunnels out all day long, or the tunnel entrances all day long. But to get inside there, and of course, that's not to scale. You have to go through, it's not too dissimilar from the other, the Yazd facility that we've shown you, where it's way down deep inside. So it's not that easy to get to the inside. But the bottom line is you can't get to there. And even in his answer, Secretary Hegseth said, oh, well, that's just if there's any country on God's earth that can get that done, it's the greatest power in the military history of all that. You know, whatever. He repeats that just humiliating nonsense over and over. No, we can't. You can throw bombs at the mountain and blow up rocks all day long on the surface, but you're not going to do anything to whatever happens to be inside. I don't know if they're doing this stuff inside or not. It could be true. It would be reasonable to suspect if they did. I wouldn't be surprised if that's actually what happened, if that's not what they're doing right now. Again, that's why I have an ongoing concern that one day we may see a nuclear blast somewhere where they test it out and say, by the way, we're now a nuclear weapon state. We've matched it to a warhead. And if anybody does anything further to us, or if we get attacked with a nuclear weapon, you're going to get one in return. So I worry about that. But that just shows the fecklessness and the stupidity of what we're doing. We're pushing ourselves, even though we've proven already that you can't get it to these 30 some odd missile cities already. So stuff like this is going to keep happening because they can continue to launch it, and you're going to hit targets, and they're going to keep hurting and killing Americans in the process because we have so much arrogance that we can't stop what we're not succeeding at. And even when his own words are shown to him, this is what you said months ago, and it's not true now. When is it ever going to be? It's not going to. He doesn't know how to tell the truth, and they don't know how to walk away. They don't know how to do anything except doubling down on failure. It is shocking to me how bad we are getting on this very topic here, that we cannot tell the truth on anything. And even worse than that, we cannot recognize when a course of action has failed, and instead we want to try it again, and somehow thinking that geography and geology are not going to apply next time when they have all the time up to this point. That's almost suicide. That's self-defeat. So you're going to continue to dwindle down our stockpiles. You're going to continue to throw what limited missiles that we have and in interceptor missiles, you're going to continue to burn those down until we're going to be left with nearly nothing. You can't go another 40 days, and we're 11 in. You can't go another 40 days and keep on throwing that much ordnance out there, because then you're going to run out. You're going to have to go back to just whatever else we can find in the inventory. And it ain't going to be that good stuff. You won't work either. But now that if we ever need that, because we need to fire something that's effective and accurate long range to some unknown target at the moment, we're just not going to have it. That is reprehensible. It's incompatible. It's just incomprehensible that we would do something like that and just couldn't recognize it because of our arrogance. We can't admit something didn't work, so we're just going to keep doing something that doesn't work. I don't know where this is going. I don't know what they're going to try to get done here, but we can't outlast Iran. They can continue firing missiles, and they can continue absorbing what we're shooting at them. It's going to hurt, but they can continue doing it until we no longer have anything effective to use. And meanwhile, Strait of Hormuz is still closed. Bab al-Mandab, as far as I'm aware, is still closed to Saudi oil anyway. That's keeping the global supply short. It's making the price of oil go up. Diesel fuel is going up because the supplies are going down. Jet fuel is going up because the supplies are going down. Fertilizer is still not getting out. Sulfuric acid is not getting out. Helium is not getting out. All of this has ramifications and compounding problems on economies across the globe. All of that is worsened by what we're doing here. Well, we'll have to wait and see what happens next. We'll certainly keep on top of it. Have another couple of really good shows coming up for you. Actually, next here at 11 a.m., we have Professor Mirandi together with us, and he's going to give us the lowdown on how Iran is reacting to all the things we're seeing here, and are they themselves going to ramp this up, and are they going to start hitting even more targets further afield? We're going to listen to him at 11 a.m. And then at 12 o'clock, we have the ever-popular Larry the Shirt Johnson, former CIA analyst. And he's always got some great stuff. We're also going to go into a little bit more about what's happening in the Russia-Ukraine war with him, because he's always got such great contacts. Look forward to seeing you both of those at 11 and 12 on the Daniel Davis Deep Dive. You know we don't have sponsors because we hate to hit you over the head with ads. I don't like them. So show a little love back. Subscribe, like, and send this to somebody you care about.